This episode of the Android Central podcast is brought to you by Lynda.com. It's the online learning platform with more than 3,000 on-demand video courses to help you strengthen your business, technology, and creative skills. For a free 10-day trial, visit lynda.com/androidcentral. That's lynda.com/androidcentral.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome to the Android Central podcast. It is episode number 252 for what probably will be Friday, September 4th, 2015. Haven't decided yet. We're actually recording this a little early, and that's okay because we are in Berlin, Germany for the IFA conference. I'm Phil Nickenson. What's left of me? It's been a long week already, and we're, what, halfway through it now? We've got one of those rare podcasts, so if this is your first time listening, we are actually all in the same room on this show, and that gets fun and noisy and echoey and a little crazy. So we generally sound a little better than this. We generally sound a little more rested than this, and it's just going to be fun. So we've got Alex Dobie here from AC.
Hey, everyone.
You all know Alex. We got Richard Devine, who makes appearances every now and then.
Once in a while.
You guys are in better shape than we are because you're only, what, an hour ahead from England?
Euro time is easier to adjust to.
Yeah.
For us.
We've got Derek Kessler, who wears many hats for Mobile Nations.
Hey there.
Everybody. Yeah. We have Mark Gwim, who does a lot of video, usually for Windows Central. Sometimes he helps me out in New York and stuff and wherever, and he's with us here in Germany. Mark, it's awesome.
Hello.
And he's also... Mark doesn't talk enough. Like, because when he does, it's usually pretty awesome, and you just kind of want to make him do it more, right?
But he's the guy behind the camera, I suppose, isn't he? So he's...
Oh, there's no camera this time, though.
That's right.
Oh, talk away, Mark.
Mark Unfiltered.
It's the Mark Gwim show. Let's go.
So, yeah, we are here in Germany, and IFA, it's... I mean, look, we came over kind of expecting things to be a little subdued, because traditionally this is where Samsung has announced the year's Galaxy Note phone.
It's always been the Samsung show, isn't it?
Right.
In years past.
And this year, it's just... Well, it's kind of not, because... They already announced it, but I guess it is still kind of the Samsung show.
A little bit. We got two Samsung press conferences out of it, so there's that. We've already had the Note, we've already had the S6 Edge Plus, we're going to get the Watch, so we'll see.
It's still
a lot of Samsung.
I mean, you want to start with that? Let's talk about the Gear S2. So Derek and I went and saw that. We are awash in a sea of smartwatches right now. Some better than others. I think the design across the board is getting better. We've got the new Moto 360. We've got the Huawei Watch. We've got the Zen Watch 2.
I just want to point out the Huawei Watch. Are we going to revert to Watch by the end of the night?
No, we're not.
Okay.
Oh.
Nice. Huawei Watch is a nice offer.
And like they've all grown in terms of design. I think universally they are all not necessarily... more attractive to women.
And they've gone from being rectangles on your... from being smartphones on your wrist to being more of a timepiece that just happens to do computery stuff.
Right. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like, they haven't gotten any more functionality today than they had 2 weeks ago.
And really. Look, we're still figuring out what we want them to do.
Right.
Google is still figuring out what it wants the platform to be, and so is Apple, and so is everyone else with a stake in that market.
So we had Samsung come in, and they teased, what, a few weeks ago at the Note event, actually, that, hey, by the way, we're going to do this new watch at IFA. And now we have it, and it's their first round watch. The display is stunning. I mean, it's still, like, what, 1.3 inches like everybody else.
Right. It's a standard watch size face, but it is an OLED display. I'm not entirely sure off the top of my head what the resolution is, but it's fantastic.
It really doesn't matter, because those are just specs at that point.
Yeah.
I was thinking about that as you're looking at... Oh, they're coming to get us.
Uh-oh.
As you're looking at the specs on the Huawei Watch aren't that much better than the specs on, say, the original Zen Watch. Like, you're talking 320 versus... 380, 400, whatever it is.
Yeah, and look, the advancement of specs of smartwatches isn't really in line with what you get with smartphones, because with smartphones, there's more stuff to get better. There are more cameras, there's more camera technology to pack in there, there's improvements in SoCs in a way that you don't necessarily see that would make any difference to a smartwatch. With a smartwatch, it's more about the challenge of miniaturizing that into this really small frame How small can you make a battery while keeping enough battery life to last a day? How bright can you make a screen to use in direct sunlight, and how dark can you make it to use it comfortably in a darkened room? The completely different challenges to the year-on-year kind of cycle that you see with smartphones.
With Samsung, there, and you also have the body of it. The body is really small. I don't think I've used a watch this light, and I need to go back and look on paper. But in me, I'm coming from a metal watch, the LG Urbane, with a metal bracelet on it, and it's all very heavy. But Samsung stuff is really light. You have different strap options that you can use. But it doesn't... It looks more sporty than the others, I guess, is where I'm getting it. There are two versions, yeah.
Yeah, the standard version looks much more sporty. And it has the bands are interchangeable, but they also are very kind of integrated to that design versus the classic, which is a more traditional smartwatch, traditional watch type design.
Yes.
Okay. traditional, I think they're 22mm lug attachments where you can put on any band. They have their own bands that they'll be selling, but you can put in other bands. And a watch, the bezel around the watch even looks more traditional with notching on it versus the standard smooth bezel that's on the non-classic Gear S2.
And they've added some functionality there. You can turn the bezel to, instead of swiping through menus and all the apps and stuff, you can turn it to do it. We only used it for 45 minutes. I found myself kind of reverting to swiping just because I'm used to that. I'm curious to see when I wear it for a length of time how I'll handle that.
And I guess it's the old argument of, do you want to cover the screen with, on such a small device, do you want to cover the screen with your finger?
We still have to tap it, though. Like, you use that to move through things, but you still have to tap whatever it is you want to do.
The argument on the Apple Watch always was that you could turn the crown, and that was easier than trying to...
And it's the same way. It is the same way with the Apple Watch. You can turn the crown, but then you still have to tap the screen to get to whatever you're trying to get.
But you could say that maybe turning the bezel around the watch or whatever is easier than trying to fiddle with it.
It's more traditional watch movement, though, isn't it?
It is.
Yep. Watches have had bezels that do that for...
Right. And it gives you more travel. I have an Apple Watch, and that the digital crown, you can get maybe one or two scroll pages out of it on the watch. Whereas with that bezel, you can just keep going and going and going.
It's also got two buttons on the side. The top button is back. The bottom button is home.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of going back and forth a little bit on the home button because you end up in like... Kind of indicative to Samsung stuff, there's a lot going on.
Yes.
There's a menu, there's like an app drawer, for lack of a better term, that contains all the apps. But then there's also, you have all your notifications, and the short version is you twist left to go to the notifications, twist right to go to your apps. But it still feels like there's more going on than that. Talk about the apps. They basically loaded up every app they knew that worked well with the Gear S2 as it stands today. And those were on the watches. So I had to keep telling myself, don't worry about it. You don't have to have all these actually on your watch when you're using it. Because I was a little overwhelmed.
It was a lot of apps.
Which is
a testament to that.
That's great, I think. That means developers are making use of the Tizen SDK, which ultimately is good for us as users. And that's what really stood out to me was the apps that Samsung had on board are apps that we've needed on Android Wear for a long time and still don't have.
So you used Uber as an example, right?
Yeah. Uber on the Gear S2, still not on Android Wear. They didn't have Starbucks on there, but like that's another one that, why the hell is that not on Android Wear at this point? Or the other example I used was Google Wallet. It still is just a basic notification on Android Wear. So my phone says, hey, I realize you're at Starbucks. Swipe down to use your barcode. And I can swipe down on my phone, but it says that on the watch, and I can't do it. So, they've got a lot of stuff working well, but a lot of stuff that isn't. On Android Wear.
Yeah.
Samsung has a lot of things that I think are going to be working well that Android Wear is still struggling with.
All right, and one of the things worth mentioning about this is up until now, every Samsung smartwatch has been tied to Samsung devices. With the Gear S2, they're doing a very new thing, and that's they are opening it up to other Android devices. If you're running Android 4.4 or higher, and your device has more than 1.5 gigabytes of RAM, it can pair with the Gear S2.
That's huge. Now, there are some caveats to that. One is, if you're not using a Samsung phone, Samsung Pay won't work for obvious reasons. Mm-hmm. They said there's some other APIs that might be a little clunky, specifically phone APIs they've seen some wonk with if a manufacturer does something weird. We'll have to see. I don't know. I'm really curious to see how that works. But I think it's a huge thing for us as users. I think it's a big thing for Samsung, too. One is Samsung recognizing that we need to open up a little bit. There are other phones out there, and that's important.
I think, look, Samsung is encountering even more competition in the Android space. They're no longer the king of that hill in the way they were maybe a year or two ago. Yep. They realize they need to draw people into their ecosystem more than ever before.
But I think it's going to open up what appears in the first 45 minutes of me seeing it is going to be a really good watch with a lot of really good options. I'm really curious to see how the fitness stuff will work on a non-Samsung device. I hope that's not an issue.
So does it hook into to S Health or whatever it might be called nowadays?
On non-Samsung devices, you mean?
Is that what the watch is using? Is it using Samsung's own?
Yeah, I mean, it's all in the SDK, so it's wherever the hooks are for that. But I just don't know how it's going to behave on non-Samsung devices yet. Really fast. Can't say enough about the software. And so many times in pre-briefs like this, you end up getting pre-production software that's a little janky, a little laggy, and we kind of shrug it off and hope it gets better. You could fly through these menus as quickly as you could move your finger or turn the bezel, and not once did I see it lag. It was night and day different from Android Wear as we know it now. That's going to be a big deal as well. We don't have price on this yet.
We'll have it in the States here in October, but that's as close as they got.
Just because. But yeah, we don't know how much it's going to cost. I don't know what I'd pay for this.
I mean, as we talk about the Huawei watch and the prices for that thing going up into, $700-$800 or whatever, you've got to imagine that there's plenty of room there for Samsung to put something out that is quite functional, quite attractive, but also quite kind of expensive and maybe not quite as much as the Huawei watch, but certainly getting up there.
They probably have more legroom to undercut them, though, I would think.
Possibly.
Well, let's talk about the Huawei watch real quick. I've seen it. Have any of you guys gotten to see it yet?
I saw it in Barcelona.
I've seen it very briefly on a few occasions.
Yeah, so I mean, this one's been around. It was actually announced at Mobile World Congress back in late February. It's essentially, I mean, if you've seen the Moto 360, if you've seen the LG Watch Urbane, it's kind of like those. It's round, but it's got a really thin bezel, a really nice design. the gold version is really nice. And like they said, it's got a number of price points. It ranges from $349 up to $800 for gold on gold.
It's a lot of money for a smartwatch, but just as the Apple Watch can be, you can spend ridiculous money on one of those as well. But the thing that always stood out for me with the Huawei watch, and it goes back to Mobile World Congress, where the kind of the proper launch event, because they didn't really mention it much here. It's available. Hey, go start buying it. But they brought in watch designers. So they wanted to make, obviously they wanted to make an Android Wear watch, but they wanted to make it like a piece of jewelry. They wanted to design it as something that watch buyers might actually want to wear as well. So, you've got the sapphire lens and the forged stainless steel. And, it is a premium watch. The materials are all there. It's digital, it's Android rather than like a traditional analog.
And at that point, you're paying for the fashion more than anything. I mean, you're paying extra for the different bands. The alligator looked really cool. And by the way, it's not actually alligator. It's stamped, calfskin to look like alligator. But it's really nice. So I think it's really cool to have options like that.
The question there is the Huawei brand going to work against that for the fashion value of it? Because it's still pretty much an unknown brand in the US. It's a nice-looking watch. But when you have a brand that doesn't really have that kind of in the US and is still struggling in Europe, well, not struggling, but it's certainly nowhere near as big a presence as, say, a Samsung or an LG. How are they going to get around that?
Yeah, I don't know.
That's an unanswered question at this point.
Maybe we'll see some proper marketing from them here in the US, maybe?
Maybe.
I don't know.
Other thing, Android Wear, we now have iPhone support for some of those. So it was announced this week. So officially, I think it's still the Urbane and later watches, although the Moto 360 supposedly supports as well.
And the Huawei watches.
The Huawei watch. So, yeah, big deal. less functionality than you would get pairing it to an Android phone, but sure. I think important for Android Wear as a platform to be getting in there on iOS.
I think it's important just to be able to say, yes, by the way, it works with iOS.
Yeah.
Even if it doesn't work as well, just the fact that they're doing it is
and
a big
you thing. Have the same gateway drug argument of dragging people into the Android ecosystem the same way you would drag people from other Android OEMs into the Samsung ecosystem. It's all a big ecosystem war between all these wearable platforms.
We've got the new Moto 360 as well. And again, it's iterative in design, and the internals are all pretty much the same across the board at this point. Yeah, I mean, that's probably the biggest change for Motorola.
All 410s, right? Snapdragon 410s.
Yeah, moving to Snapdragon instead of this old TI processor. But it's almost like, and not to downplay Motorola, because I think it's a good change, but it's almost like when one of your biggest bullet points is, we now have 40 to 50 watch faces. Like, okay.
That's nice.
That's a lot of watch faces.
That was kind of a weird moment in the launch event, the Lenovo launch event as well, which was another kind of.
How weird is it, by the way, to have Lenovo launching Motorola? Devices?
Well, this is the thing. It was a Lenovo executive that was on stage launching the new Moto 360, and then obviously when they start going through the Moto Maker stuff and that, and then they get to the watch faces and how you can customize watch faces and stuff on Moto Maker, and I mean obviously we know there are a lot of watch faces out there, and maybe some first time buyers don't. But it just seemed like an odd thing to highlight, especially at like an event like that where there is supposedly a knowledgeable crowd.
And everyone said the same thing. We have 40 watch faces. I mean, think back to what Android Wear really is, though. It is a Google product, and I think all of these watches, by extension. You will hear all the manufacturers say, we developed this in conjunction with Google. We developed it with Google.
It's a Google product that's much more clamped down than Android on your smartphone is.
It's something you could argue maybe that Google, if they were to do Android over again, would want to exert that level of control over it.
Mm-hmm.
And that level of control over updates, over the software experience. And that's what they've done in the past year with Android Wear. And I think we've seen certainly less fragmentation. We've seen more tighter control over updates. Of course, certain devices have to wait longer. There's still that difference in hardware. But it's been more controlled, and I think there's been less kind of just uncertainty over the software experience and the way that changes and when you're going to get updated.
Which, as an Android Wear user, is great. And there's nothing worse than having an Android phone. Say you get the latest Samsung phone and Android 5.3 comes out. And you're sitting there waiting for years.
If it ever 5.3.
I know it doesn't make sense.
Marshmallow.
Yes, marshmallow. And with an Android Wear watch, they announced the updates for adding complicated faces that support complications. And I had it on my Moto 360 within a week.
Mm. That's the way it should work.
Right. And that's a great benefit to the way that Google is exerting that kind of control. But at the same time, it takes a lot of the ability to offer something unique out of the hands of manufacturers. They're forced to compete on hardware and watch faces.
Maybe that's why the Samsungs of the world are off on their own doing their own thing.
Mm-hmm.
No new watch from Sony this week?
Nope. We did get new Sony phones. So, segue.
Let's do this. Let's take a quick break because we still have to do ads even though we're in Europe. How about that?
Euro ads.
No, they're US ads. So let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we will talk some phones. How about that?
Football kicks off for real in just a few more days, and that, of course, means fantasy football. And what's more is that means that FanDuel Week 1 games are just about here. If you've yet to get into a league, or if you're looking for something different and in many ways better, you need to check out FanDuel. It's the leader in a one-week fantasy football with more winners and more payouts than any other site. Well, how much more? Try more than $75 million a week this football season. The salary cap format lets you pick any players you want for just 1 week, and entries start at $1, so anyone can play. And that also means there's a lot less luck involved, so you won't get shafted in the long term if your favorite player goes down with an injury. So go to FanDuel.com and click the microphone in the upper right corner. Then use the code ANDROID to sign up now. And we've got a special offer for new users. For every dollar you deposit, FanDuel will match it with up to $200 that gets earned as you play. That's a bonus of up to $200. The offer is only good for the first 50 people who use our code, though, so be sure to sign up using code Android today. Hit the mic in the upper right at FanDuel.com and use the code Android. FanDuel.com, where every day is a new season.
Okay, so phones.
Phones
at IFA.
So the biggest phone at IFA, I think, is undoubtedly kind of a milestone for smartphones in general. The world's first 4K phone.
I thought you were going to go with the Lenovo Fab, like the literal biggest phone.
Look, I mean, the Lenovo Fab looks nice. It's kind of a funny iPhone-looking thing, but it's a nice-looking phone.
It has an odd name.
Look, they were able to trademark that name, and all credit to them for that. It's a mid-range, phablet-type device, I guess mainly aimed at Asia. Looks a lot like an iPhone. Great, okay. So onto the kind of the big milestone that we had today from Sony, which was the Xperia Z5 series, but more specifically the Z5 Premium, which is the world's first 4K phone. We now have a phone with 806 pixels per inch.
I don't have a 4K TV yet.
I mean, most people don't. Here's the thing. No. You can buy this phone, presumably, unless it's absurdly expensive, for considerably less than you'll be able to get a 4K TV.
Okay, so the question is, why?
The question is why. I mean, there are a few reasons why you would have that kind of density in the display. Maybe you're doing something with VR. As far as we know, Sony isn't, at least not in phones. So, you know, the other reasons are, I guess, bragging rights. It's a good spec to have. Sony, all credit to them, got there first. But, I mean, for all practical reasons, if you're doing that on 2015 technology, what do you get out of it?
I saw some talk today from people who are much smarter at this stuff than I am, about pixel density and Asian characters.
Yeah, but I mean, you're kind of already at that point with 2K displays where it's pretty much good enough to the point. I mean, and here's the thing. With a 4K display, you can get so close to it your eyes can't even focus on the display and still not see any pixels. So that is well beyond the point of being able to see complicated characters or whatever on the screen. I think we're pretty much at that point with 2K displays now where it's, you can reasonably read any small character set on there. I think that argument with a 4K display doesn't really fly. Just my opinion, we'll see.
I mean, if anybody needs a bit of bragging rights, it's got to be Sony right now, right? In phones, because...
I mean, the last...
We've given them a bit of a hard time, but not necessarily...
Some of us have given them kind of a hard time. The Z3 Plus was a bit of a train wreck, in all honesty. There were issues with overheating. The battery life wasn't great. They were doing all kinds of weird stuff with the processor where it was running with a bunch of cores off some of the time. That was not a good phone. Hopefully they would have been able to fix some of that with software updates.
So did Sony say what? So you mentioned in these things like battery, and the first thing that hits me is I see 4K display on a smartphone. What does it do to the battery?
Well, that's the question. We don't know.
What does it do to performance?
Does it have a massive battery, or is it just like...
We don't know either of those two points yet. The units we saw today were behind glass. They weren't running software that you could actually interact with. The battery, Sony said, I think, that is a 3,400 and something battery, a milliamp hour battery. They were saying up to 2 days. So
what was powering this thing?
An A10, Snapdragon A10. So all of the Z5s are powered by an A10. I've heard, supposedly, that Sony has got a lot better at getting performance out of the A10 without it running ridiculously hot, without it running down the battery quite as much as it did with the Z3 Plus. But again, we won't know how this plays out until we actually get devices in hand, and especially until we get the Z5 Premium in our hands and find out how that display figures into all this as well. I mean, it's inevitable that this is just the way phone displays are going to go. Eventually, it will just become so easy to put a 4K display in a phone that every high-end phone will have one.
And then we'll have 6K displays!
Well, here's the thing. At what point... I think we're at the point now where there is just no point in going beyond 4. I mean...
Right, we were saying that at 2K, though.
We were saying that at 2K.
1080p.
We were saying that
1080p.
At
5 inches is... You know, 5.5 inches isn't exactly... You know, you're not scratching your eyes out because of pixels, are you? So, I mean...
When you can't even move the display close enough to your eyes to be able to discern any pixels, I think that is the point at which you're just at diminishing returns.
Under a microscope.
In something that you're supposed to hold in one hand and something you're supposed to view with your human eyes, how are you supposed to get beyond that display resolution, and what is the point?
How do they make this phone to where it's actually affordable?
Oh, we don't have pricing yet. I mean, yeah. It's going to be expensive. Look, it's an expensive high-end phone with a screen the likes of which we haven't seen before.
It's a bragging rights phone.
It is a bragging rights.
It's like buying the Galaxy S6 Edge.
Yep.
It's sort a fine phone, but you're paying extra money for a feature that doesn't really give you that much more.
And yeah, so it's an impressive technical feat, but exactly. We'll have to. Yeah, I'm interested to try this one. Interested to review. We'll see how that actually plays out in real world use. But inevitably, this is just the way things are going to be from now on. But I think this is the wall. This is the wall at which it is just stupid and pointless to go beyond.
This here, no father.
Yes. So we will see a higher display.
Yeah, 12 months time. 12 months time.
Ads will be eating crow.
Probably.
What was more exciting to you guys? Huawei's sort of.
So I'm going to kind of stop you, Phil. We do have two more phones from Sony.
Oh, God.
Right.
Thought you were done, but there was more.
No, two more phones from Sony.
Last year it was just a rant. This year it's like.
It's a bit more civilized. Yeah, we have the Z5, the regular Z5, which is an upgraded. So you know, every 6 months or 9 months or whatever, Sony tends to step up in terms of performance, in terms of camera. This time. It's powered by an 810 like the previous generation, but we have a new generation of Sony cameras, 23 megapixels, new technology in terms of low light performance and stuff like that, a new lens, f2.0 lens. So it's the biggest Sony camera change we've seen since the Z1 2 years ago, which is a big deal for them because they've been using that same sensor for the past 2 years in like four phones. So it's nice to see a change there. So we have that, 5.2 inches with a 1080p display, nice new design, metal edges, and a new kind of frosted glass back. I think they call this a bit more matte than what we had last year, so it's not as glossy, not as fingerprinty. We also had a new compact, so Jerry will be happy. New compact Sony phone.
Yep.
4.6 inch display, 720p, same internals more or less, Snapdragon 810, so it's the highest end stuff.
Did they all have the same camera?
They all have the new camera, the 23 megapixel camera.
So why do we have a 4K 5.5 inch phone? 5.5?
5.5, yeah.
5.5. But the 4.6 inch phone is still 720p.
That's a good question. I mean, the compact has always been 720. That's just the way right. It's always been. I mean,
that's what the iPhone is, and people mock the iPhone for being 4.7 and 756.
Yeah, I mean, that's a question for Sony's product people, I guess. But having used the Z3 compact at the same screen size, same resolution, it looks perfectly fine.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I have an iPhone that's that resolution, and it's fine.
Because there's more to display quality than just pure resolution, right?
Right.
So yeah, we have those three screen sizes, those three price points, presumably. The one thing I didn't notice about the new compact is it is kind of plasticky compared to last year's. Last year's was plasticky, but I think this year's was more kind of obviously plastic, and the white one that I played with is kind of matte around the outsides. Maybe didn't look quite as premium as the Z3, but of course you do still get all that nice hardware in there, the new camera, the 810. 2 gigs of RAM, not 3, but yeah, who really cares about that?
But it's kind of important as well that at least one smartphone maker is considering people don't necessarily all want massive phones.
And look, the trend is going in the opposite direction in a lot of ways. You have the likes of Motorola with the Play here, which is their mid-range phone at 5.5, going into the Moto X style, the Pure Edition at 5.7, to the point where it's almost like Phil was saying with the Galaxy Note 5, 5.5 to 5.7 is the new normal now. It feels normal to pick up a 5.7-inch phone with slim bezels and just use it normally like you would a regular smartphone.
And then we have some companies which are making their flagship smartphones smaller than their previous models.
Is that a segue into...
That's a segue into
the Huawei Mate S?
The Mate S. No Ascend. It's gone.
Which is good. I mean, they kind of got rid of that with the P8 earlier in the year.
You're about to hear a lot about this phone because Huawei sent one home with, I don't know if it was everybody, but it was...
I mean, it's a good...
There were a couple hundred people there.
Yeah.
A thousand or so, at least, at the event today. And
they gave out a lot of these today.
Yeah, so a lot of us went home with these things.
You're going to hear a lot about this phone from a lot of people, including us, because we all have it. But that said...
It is a nice phone. Look,
it is a nice phone.
Here's the thing. I say this every time I use a Huawei phone. Every time I do a hands-on of a Huawei phone or review it, it's nice hardware. Huawei continues to get better at hardware.
Hardware.
And like I said this with the Honor 7 last week. It keeps getting better. This, I think, is a step beyond that. It's a lot slimmer. You have the curved back, almost HTC-like in the metal curve that you have on the sides and the back. Very nice design. You have the antenna cutout, which is perfectly flush with the metal.
The fingerprint scanner on the back of this thing is excellent.
Ridiculously fast.
Yeah.
I mean, it was good last year on the Mate 7, right. But it's...
even better now.
I mean, they boasted about, you know, like 100% performance improvement or something, but I mean...
No exaggeration. I think it's
lightning fast.
I think just in terms of the build quality and the hardware, they are absolutely up there with Samsung and Apple now. No doubt in my mind.
It is genuinely tough to find it. Like, even... really, really thinking hard.
The speaker is crap. I was playing some music earlier, and the speaker is crap for music. So is the Galaxy S6. The software, however, is...
Look, the software is hard as Huawei software. It's like I said, the same review I've been writing for the past year of Huawei phones. The hardware is really nice. The software is weird and a lot of ways bad. They've actually fixed a lot of the long-standing bugs we've been seeing in early Huawei phones. So the Gmail bug, which gave you duplicate notifications for the past 8 months of Huawei phones, is now fixed. Great, it now works properly. They're still doing some of the obnoxious things where lock screen notifications work different for no good reason, where they're all configuring your icons and putting circular things around them for no good reason. It is excessively kind of customized to the point that you're probably not going to be used to if you're using an LG phone or a Samsung phone, something a little bit closer to Google material design kind of thing.
For me, the design, like how it looks, is secondary, because if you really want to, you can change most of it. And
I've spent the past couple hours like loading all my usual stuff up, and that helps somewhat, but not 100%.
It's the biggest problem for me with the software has always been the stuff that just shouldn't happen and the stuff that was broken. So, you know, we've had the notifications for important processes that are consuming power. Do you want to close this app? No. You shouldn't get notifications for anything on a phone that's doing that. And when they launched the P8 earlier this year, it just wouldn't work with Android Wear, for example. So there's all the design for kind of it can take a backseat to that when there are just things that are fundamentally broken. And look, so we've already established a couple of bugs might have been fixed.
Yeah,
but
this is a lot less broken than the P8 was, let's put it that way. But I think the interesting thing for this, for a lot of people, especially in the US, who won't even have the opportunity to buy this phone, is if this is the manufacturer that is making the next Nexus, this is a really solid design to build up for that. And I think if they're working with Google to make something that is of this quality in terms of the hardware with stock Android, I think that's going to be a phone worth getting excited about.
And they're building things like fingerprint scanners and stuff into a Nexus phone. This is probably the one to...
This is the one I would want to have, yeah.
Did they say where or how much they're going to sell this one?
I think it's mainly Asia and Western Europe. There was a list
in like 20 countries initially in the over the next few weeks.
The price, though.
The price is starts at €650, I believe.
That's a lot of money.
A lot of money for the 32 gig model. So you have 64 gig for a little bit more, and also 128 gig. And the interesting thing about the 128 gig model is you also get Force Touch. So they've got out there kind of in front of Apple, except not really, because the product.
Yeah.
Is for the Android crowd here? What is Force Touch?
Force Touch is basically the ability for a touch screen or any touch sensitive.
Pressure sensitive.
Like
touch
the BlackBerry
surface.
Storm.
No. Nothing. Don't mention that travesty.
So it's the ability to be able, to be able to press down hard on a screen for the screen to be able to react intelligently to that. So to be able to zoom in on a photo or something like that is what a lot of people are expecting for the next iPhone in the next week or so.
Yeah, and they have things like you can obviously it has on-screen buttons. You can minimize the on-screen buttons, get rid of them completely, and just touch the bottom of the phone as if they were capacitive buttons, but obviously it's just the bezel of the phone. But they spent a lot of time talking about this in the press conference, and then it gets to the kind of the end, the meat of it, where they start talking about pricing and availability. And as the pricing slide comes up, there's a little message on the bottom that says, Force Touch will be available on a 128GB model made available in the future. So on the one hand, great news, 128GB phone coming. On the other hand, they dedicated a whole 5-minute segment of their big press event to this feature that nobody will get.
Yeah, now you mentioned they've had the picture zooming and the fake capacitive buttons off the bottom of the screen.
There's one other thing that they mentioned for that, and it was actually being able to weigh things.
Weigh oranges.
Really?
Oranges. You could. They damaged, or at least showed a rendering of, you could put a piece of fruit on your phone and weigh it.
I often wonder how much my fruit weighs while I'm out and about.
Yes. It's very important to know how many
grams. But as a proof of concept alone, it's really interesting stuff. It's just a shame that we can't play with it. You know, we got enough of these things sat on the table. And
we could
jam it in all we want.
We could have bought some oranges. We could be having the time of our lives right now.
It's not going to happen.
It could be good for packages, too. Like, when you mail packages, you want to know how much it's going
to
cost.
Well, you could just buy, like, you're going to put it on top of the phone and won't be able to see the phone.
That's true.
Got it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of good stuff in... There is a lot of good stuff in the phone, but then you get to the price, and... In Asia, they might be able to get away with it, but there is no way in Europe. We don't understand the Chinese market, right? So, I mean, in China, they might be able to charge whatever they want for these things, and people may buy them. But in Europe, it won't fly. No one will buy this phone unlocked for 650 euros.
I almost feel like in Europe, the mass market thing in Europe isn't Huawei anymore, it's Honor. That's the way they're positioning it.
This is the thing. Honor, like, when Honor originally arrived in Europe, they were building it as the direct to consumers, cut out the carriers, just like go and buy it on somewhere like Amazon. We'll bring that, you'll be able to then get a premium phone for less money because we're just going to sell it to you.
And now
they're tying up with carriers and...
Yeah, and
I think, like, part of the reason why we kind of turned our nose up at the price point is because the software is so bad. I think if it was something that we were maybe more familiar with, a TouchWiz or a Sense kind of thing that was at least a little bit more Android-y, a little bit less overwrought with just customizations.
Even if the software is there, though, this is nice physical hardware.
True.
But is the technology there to justify that cost point?
I would say more or less. It's a very nice, got a nice screen. That the camera is,
it's decent.
It's close to the top. It's not quite up there with the top end of Android stuff. It is close. I think it beats the M9.
Okay.
Beats a lot of phones that are in the high end space that maybe don't have quite so great cameras. It's not, obviously, if you're at Huawei, you can't necessarily, afford to be in a position like Samsung and LG is getting the very, very best technology in there. In the same way that OnePlus can't do that. But I think just overall, in terms of the build quality, there's a lot there. And technologically, they have their own chip, of course. There's a lot they can do there by tying that to the software in a way that they can get maybe more out of the performance of a bunch of A53 cores that others might not be able to. I think it's getting there, but obviously, 650 euros is a high asking price for any phone.
Mm-hmm. We got some new phones. Well, not really new phones, but Asus trucked out some of the phones they've already shown elsewhere. The Zenfone 2 Deluxe is a looker. I mean, it's basically a Zenfone 2 with good specs, with really good specs. Up to
4 gigs of RAM. It's 4 gigs RAM standard.
Right, up to 128, I believe it was.
Yeah, 64 or 128 gigabytes of storage.
And the back of this thing is done in like this diamond cut geometric gem pattern. It's beautiful. I loved it. I thought it was really nice. I think their back buttons still leave something to be desired.
It's kind of, don't
execute on that quite well enough.
Not as well as LG just suddenly.
Yeah. And then we have other Zenfone models that, again, they'd shown elsewhere, were around elsewhere. You've got one with laser autofocus. You've got one with a 5,000 mAh battery. You've got the Zenfone Selfie with the giant front-facing camera. Am I missing one?
I have to say the Zenfone Max with the 5,000 mAh battery was surprisingly compact.
Yep.
It's millimeters thicker. Well, of course, anything's millimeters thicker. It's only a handful of millimeters thicker than the standard Zenfone 2. It's noticeably heftier, but for the amount of battery that's packed in that, it's really impressive. We've got those three or four Zenfones, which are all sort of iterations on the Zenfone 2. And then there's the Zenfone Zoom.
And this is something we actually saw months and months ago at CES. It kind of fell off the map for like 9 months. We didn't see it at Computex. We didn't see it at NWC. And I think a lot of us just assumed that.
To be fair, we didn't really see it at CES either. I mean, Mark and I did that.
It was behind glass,
wasn't
it?
How many megapixels?
Models.
I don't even remember. 21?
13.
It has some megapixels.
The big deal is it has a 3x optical zoom, which is, you know, getting up there with like Lumia was optical, right?
No, Lumia was oversampling.
Samsung had optical in the Galaxy S. Whatever camera series, which is very, very bulky.
Yeah, and this phone is less than 12 millimeters at its thickest.
It's really thin.
It is shockingly thin for what
the way they're doing the optical zoom is. Obviously it's really clever stuff, but the fact that they can, I mean, if you're familiar with the Lumia 1020, it's probably the closest thing to the actual kind of design and the overall look and feel of it, because you've got that. You got the hump on the back of the camera, because obviously there's some serious, you know, equipment in there, so it has to go somewhere.
Right.
But
it has a 10 element lens in it, whereas your standard smartphone, they said, has usually 5 to 7 elements in it, and that by putting in those 10 elements, those actually move within the housing of that to accomplish that 3x optical zoom.
So they actually do that inside the length of the phone.
Right. It does not expand.
Yeah, pop out. Yeah.
Like the Galaxy cameras have. It's really unique. We didn't get a chance to really play around with the zooming aspect of the camera. There's obviously still a lot of work to do because they still don't have dates or pricing for this yet. So maybe that's it'll come out sometime in 2016.
We would be looking at a full 12 months after it was
launched. That's one of the things. We were really pumped for it at CES. Then obviously we got to the demo area and they were just dummy models behind glass. They weren't even turned on. It's been all quiet since. Then you get here and it's coming out. It's a real thing. It's not dead. But we're not going to tell you when. We're not going to tell you how much. Yeah.
Still a lot of questions about that. All right, let's take one more break. And when we come back, we will wrap this up and see what other odds and ends we have here from Berlin. So hang on. We'll be right back. So think back. You probably can't even remember when it happened, but it did. When did shaving become so expensive? When did you have to start dealing with finding a store clerk to open a case just so you could buy a razor? And how much were you paying for this privilege of actually buying something? Now think about all the things you could do if you saved that money instead by switching to Harry's. You've heard us talk about Harry's before. It's quality razors and blades and creams and foams, all shipped straight to your front door. No anti-theft devices to deal with just so you can buy something. And it's half the price of big name drugstore brands. And it's so much less hassle. I've had Harry's in my house for months now. For just a fraction of the price, you get a quality razor. It looks good. It feels good. And it has just the right heft to it. It's not too light. It's not too heavy. And it isn't some cheap disposable deal. All you have to do is literally lift a finger and order it from Harry's, and these are quality German blades, so you know they're good. Now just think about what all you could do with that money you save. You could go out to dinner, you could buy more appetizers, heck, buy a new phone, and then buy more apps. Harry is affordable, and more important is that it's good. But here's the really important stuff. The Harry Starter Kit is just $15, and that includes the razor, 3 blades, and your choice of shave cream or foaming shave gel. I use the cream because, well, that's how I roll. And yes, it makes even more sense if you're not an everyday shaver or have a luxurious beard like me. Now, why would you pay too much just for an occasional cleanup? So go to harrys.com now, and you'll get $5 off if you use code AC with your first purchase. That's HARRYS.com, and use code AC to save $5 off the starter set. Start shaving smarter today.
Come on, eat the can!
So when these guys are done with their chips, we decided we need to circle back around on Moto 360 for a second, because I guess we kind of gave a short shrift, a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually not just one watch, right?
It's actually 4 watches, isn't it? 4 distinct SKUs, if you want to call it that.
So yeah. We have
2 kind of men's editions, I guess you would call it.
46 and 42 millimeters.
Yep. You also have the Sport. Is it called the Sport?
Yep.
So the Sport, and you also have the Moto 360 Women's Edition.
Yes, they have the women's collection.
There's been a lot of back and forth on Twitter about whether it's really a women's edition or if it's just a smaller watch.
Except it's the same size as the 42 millimeter.
With the smaller strap.
The smaller strap.
With the smaller strap. But it's not nice. That doesn't make it a smaller watch.
Buy the watch that fits you best. I don't care what.
It also has a different physical design to it.
Look, there are different sizes of the Zen Watch 2, which we also saw today.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I think maybe what was kind of the misstep was to kind of awkwardly, almost ham-fistedly position this as the women's watch. Like, okay, this is a smartwatch for women.
There's no good way to do it, and everybody's looking out for that sort of, you know, gotcha moment for companies with that stuff. I get what they're doing. I think they're doing the right thing.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day,
it's tough to say.
Having two different, you know, if you go and buy a traditional watch, they come in different sizes.
Right.
Smartwatches, ultimately, to appeal to the mass markets, need to be, you know, that kind of flexible. They need to come in different sizes because, you know, I don't have particularly big wrists. I don't mind a big watch, but, you know, it's not for everyone.
So that's important. They're doing better with that. What do you guys think about the flat tire? It's still not a complete...
It's a smaller flat tire, I think, isn't it, this year? A little bit.
It never bothered me that
much. It doesn't bother me because I've always used a dark watch face on it.
I think the irritation factor for coming from having a flat tire, mm-hmm, is mitigated by the fact that you don't have to deal with constantly changing the brightness.
Exactly. That's what gives us the ambient brightness sensor. That is worth it for me.
Okay.
So that's the new 360.
That said, having seen the new Gear S2, I'm not sure I want to get the new 360.
Yeah. It's... Seriously, Samsung's done good. It's going to be a real interesting fall. So we got some other companies I guess we haven't really talked about that much yet. Acer? You want to start with them?
Why not? It was the first thing we did this morning, so why not? They got a couple of Android bits in amongst a sea of Windows announcements. The big focus for Acer this show has been that they've properly launched their Predator gaming line. So
their what line?
Predator.
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 Okay.
So, you know, it just wild designs, lots of red, but they're properly getting into gaming stuff. So obviously they've announced a bunch of Windows gaming notebooks, desktops, that kind of stuff. But it also spreads over to Android as well. So we've known for a little while, and Alex and I actually saw the Predator 8 tablet in Taipei at Computex, but they wouldn't let us touch it. It's Intel X7 powered gaming tablet, crazy so
that's
design.
The same, that's the ports. Same chip that runs on the Surface laptops, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. So I mean,
just to get the idea of
as far as mobile CPUs come, this is it's got to be up there with some of the top end stuff.
Serious amount of power.
Yeah, and I mean, I suppose that's what you kind of go for in a gaming thing, but it's now an actual product. They've announced it for sale. They've kind of relaunched it, if you like, here. Like I said, you know, we weren't allowed to touch it in Taipei. It was behind glass and just kind of sat there. But now we've taken a look at it. It's a real thing, and it's, you know, it's an 8-inch Android tablet, pretty standard 5.1 Lollipop. Four speakers on the front and little red pods on the corners. It's wild. If you want a powerful Android tablet, you do a lot of mobile gaming, it'll be worth looking at.
And the question is, maybe how does that compare with what Nvidia is doing with the Shield series right now?
And I think that'll be an interesting comparison to make, because obviously we've got the Nvidia hardware and the Intel hardware. We've never really, in an Android perspective at least, considered Intel in this kind of, you know, in this kind of way.
We've talked about it before, but actually I think Intel is one of the big winners of IFA, even though they haven't, you know, actively... I mean, Intel had a press conference this morning. They talked about a whole bunch of stuff. But behind the scenes, they are powering more of the discussion these days than I think ever before. And, you know, we've talked about it on our normal podcast. Russell's been using all kinds of devices with it. And to me, it's just like using any other processor at this point. It feels completely normal. But they absolutely are solidifying their partnership with all of these mobile manufacturers. And it's super important, and it's only going to get more important going forward.
Yeah, and if you walked into the Asus press area, they had the Asus logo right next to the Intel.
Same
with
Lenovo.
Yeah, same with Lenovo today, Acer, and, you know, they've all the individual manufacturers who've been throwing their own press events today. They've, you know, a lot of them have been, after Intel did their thing this morning, they've been trucking out, I can't forget his surname, but you know, the VP of Intel, who delivered their own press conference, has now gone on the rest of the day, right up to Lenovo this evening. You know, he's been in all these different press conferences all the day, and obviously there's been, a lot of it's been about Skylake and PCs and laptops and stuff. But the, you know, just reiterating the commitment with these companies that they're kind of working together. And when you've got some like Asus and Acer that cross over in between mobile and and computing as well, it makes a lot of sense for Intel to get into bed with those companies, because they're powering the entire product range. So Acer, we mentioned obviously the old Skylake gaming stuff and the tablet, and they've also got a gaming phone, which I think is Intel powered as well. No, was it Intel powered or was it MediaTek or something?
Didn't show it.
The Predator 6. I'm not quite sure.
Didn't have the 6.
But you know, they're basically powering an entire range of products for these companies. So I mean, it's a big deal, and I mean Intel's definitely making a lot of noise here. And we'll just like quickly touch obviously on the Predator 6 as well. So the Acer has a smaller version of the gaming tablet. It's not much smaller, but it's a phone rather than a tablet. So I mean, it's I can't think off the top of my head of any other phones that have really been marketed as a gaming phone. But it kind of looks the same kind of wild design.
It seems like a big theme this year, gaming. Like,
yeah, there's been a lot of gaming talk of the.
There's a lot of
general
Asus. They had. I mean, I'm not in that space, but holy crap, some of these case mods they had were just incredible. And
I'm not a PC gamer. I want one.
A water cooled laptop, which just seems ridiculous, but okay.
They had professional gamers on the keynotes.
Everyone's trucking out. Everyone's trucking out these pro gamer kids, and like, who? Like, I don't even know half the games that they play.
And the new router that Asus rolled out, it has like 12 antennas. It looks like it could serve up your Wi-Fi and kill an intruder who comes in your house.
Serve up Wi-Fi for a city.
It's insane. So Acer, who else have we seen? Alcatel.
So
not to be forgotten.
Bunch of entry-level, mid-range stuff.
That's what they do.
That's what they do. Yeah. Yeah, they do a pretty good job of it. We have a new Pop. Go series.
Their phones are still horribly named, though.
The names are horrible. So they have a new watch following on from the Alcatel. The Alcatel OnTouch watch they released last year or earlier this year. This one is the Go watch, interchangeable faces, interchangeable
and
straps and bands. Kind of a similar colourful design. I mean, look, it's obviously not going to suit every taste. It is very colourful. You have kind of like a circular pattern going on.
Mm-hmm. And they're offering standard like black and white versions of it as well.
Sure.
But what they showed off was colour.
It was pretty colourful. And they have a phone to match. They have a waterproof, shock-resistant, dust-resistant version of this.
It's kind
of
cool. It's a little rubbery.
A little rubbery, a little plasticky. Same kind of circular design on the back of this thing. You know, obviously matching the style of the watch. With entry level kind of like Moto G level specs in there, so Snapdragon 410, 5-inch 720p display, 2500 mAh battery, your kind of standard decent entry level Android specs, and of course the software experience they built up for that, which is not quite stock Android but fairly close to it.
Yep. They had another one. Was it the Go Play?
The Go Play was the phone. The Go Watch is the watch, obviously.
What was the Go Pop Star? That's what I'm thinking. What?
Yes,
that's the Pop Star.
I think it was just the Pop Star.
Okay.
Yeah.
Whatever.
The Alcatel OneTouch Pop Star.
See, same difference
names,
at that point.
Alcatel's names confused me last year when they had Gyro and the Pixie and the Hero and the
and they have
whatever
a Pixie,
else. And
they have a Pixie First now, which is an even lower entry level.
But the Pop Star has all these removable backs in different materials that they're actually really well done. One of the first ones they showed us was denim. So, you can have blue jeans on your phone.
Yeah.
They had leather, they had wood. I mean, a bunch of cool little backs.
And look, it remains to be seen how well that'll actually work after, like, as we've seen with the LG G4, how well those different textures will work.
How long they'll last. They said they're going to sell them they're going to sell them in packs, basically, so you'll buy two or three at a time.
Presumably, as long as you don't put denim in the washing machine with anything else, it'll retain its color.
Or turn pink. What happens?
Pink denim?
Oh, yeah, you've never had your jeans go pink?
Funnily enough,
your wife sticks your jeans in the water? Oh, yeah. It only happens once, but when it happens, it's pretty funny.
The more you know.
Yeah, and then they had a couple other, you know, it's Alcatel.
Let's talk about the giant tablet.
Right, that's the exciting part. The XS, is that how it's actually pronounced? XESS. Yeah.
It's the only way I can think to pronounce it.
So, yeah, it's this giant 17.3-inch tablet, but it's a lot more than that. It's got, I mean, it almost looks like an all-in-one PC a little bit, because it's got this big thing.
It basically is, right?
It's, yeah.
For whatever the hardware's worth, but the form factor.
It's got this big, you know, thing attached to the back of it, and if you pull up, it's a handle. If you pull down, the stand comes out, so you can, you know, stand it up and watch movies or whatever. The idea is this would be like a hub for your family. You put it in the kitchen, you put it in the living room, you can move it around, whatever. They have a dashboard on it. It's like, you know, a family dashboard. It shows the time and the weather and the news, and you can write notes to your family members on it. And
you can see Sultan that way.
Yeah, I know. You will never actually have to talk to your family again.
Finally.
Conceivably, it will pull in like fitness tracker information for the entire family in one spot. So you could see how far your, you know, wife and kids are walking every day wearing their, I'm sure, Alcatel fitness bands and, you know,
that's
whatever.
Not,
or the watch.
That's not creepy at all.
I know.
Is this battery operated or do you need to plug it in?
Both.
So you could pin this to Starbucks?
It has a 10,000 milliamp hour.
You could. You would be that guy.
It has a 10,000 milliamp hour battery.
There are going to be cellular versions of this thing, I reckon, eventually.
Yeah.
At some point further down.
At some point. And an AC charger. It's actually cool. It uses, they called it the MagPort. Was it MagPort Touch?
Mag.
Yeah, I mean, it's very much like the MagSafe port on a MacBook. I mean, this thing was cool. I love the idea. I really do. Now, they're not the first company to try this.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what we saw was very early, and obviously, you know, you're hesitant to judge the execution based off such early hardware and such early software.
If you've seen our video, the software was not good.
It was kind of janky.
Yeah.
Oh, they had gesture controls, too.
Yeah, their gesture. So you're in the kitchen cooking, using it for recipes and all that stuff. You don't want to have to watch your hands to touch the thing. You can just wave at it to do things, and you can silence it by, you know, making the shh kind of motion. And I mean, that was kind of cool. It's
but
got a stylus
to have kids as well, because, you know, if you don't,
you have to be pointing directly at it.
So like a child, then, like, you have to make the gesture and make them know that it's them.
Yeah, you make eye contact.
Look at me. I love the idea. The execution is key. The price is also going to be key. They don't have an official price on this. They were saying, you know, maybe somewhere around $800. That's a lot of money.
For a family PC, a lot of people will consider $800 to be too much.
Sure.
Something that
at that point
you can't
just
work on.
Just like, buy an all-in-one.
Yeah, buy a normal computer.
But I mean, I like the fact that Alcatel's not afraid to try something different. I mean, I remember, you know, this time last year, they showed me a bunch of prototype stuff that they were working on that some of it may never see the light of day, but they're not afraid to kind of dip their toe and try something out.
It's got 3-watt stereo speakers on the back that are very loud.
Good.
I mean, this is the sort of thing I want in my kitchen to listen to music and to watch videos if I need to, or to help with recipes. And absolutely, but not for $800. I can't justify that.
So other Alcatel stuff, I think one of the more interesting things about Crazy Readers that we came across, and something that will be teased, is this new high-end thing that is coming at some point.
It's a thing.
It is a thing.
It's a high-end thing that's a little outside the scope of what they've been doing.
Yeah, and that's a good, I mean, look,
so by thing, does this mean it's not a phone or a tablet?
No, it's a phone. It's a phone. They were kind of saying it's based on these, you know, kind of spec-centric devices at a lower price point that were coming out in the past year. So your OnePluses, what was the ZTE?
The Axon
phone. So those kinds of things. It's their answer to that. We don't know anything on specs yet. We got a very quick look at it. You know,
impressive-looking
hardware. It looked like a phone. It looked like a nicely built, you know, glass-backed metal phone. We don't know anything about price or when it'll be available or specifically what is inside it, but...
So really, you just teased a teaser, is what
you teased
did.
A teaser, yeah. So we'll have to wait and see. But
they can make good hardware.
The mid-range stuff is good. If they're aiming at a higher level, then it'll be really interesting to see what they can come up with.
They also showed us a new 4G, basically Wi-Fi hotspot for your car. I mean, it's basically like a Wi-Fi stick that plugs into your car.
Right. Yeah. It, it,
It has just has the 12 volt car outlet that you plug in there. It didn't feel like it had a battery in it. It was very, very light. So it's meant to stay in your car.
It will actually have, one, I can't remember if it was one or two USB ports in it. So you
has one USB port, one, so you're not monopolizing that port.
So you can still charge your phone. It's cool. I mean,
again, you can connect up to 15 devices.
Yeah.
If you have that many devices in your car, you might have an issue.
You might have a
car. Or you might be the Android Central team.
Yeah.
Or the Android Central team.
Or something. As is.
How badly do you need to let your kids have Wi-Fi in the car?
Depends how long the journey is,
right.
I suppose. But, I mean, it would have... I mean, I remember, like, in my old job, I basically traveled up and down the UK for a living, and, mm-hmm. and you know, I was always connected to something, but I would have to go into an actual building and plug in to the to the local network.
Sure.
Rather than, there are people who would definitely use it.
I still always have to question though, in our modern day and age, where every phone today comes with mobile hotspot support, and all the carriers now include that with whatever you're paying. Do we need dedicated mobile hotspots anymore?
I think we probably take that for granted.
I think it's situational as well. I mean, you kind of... The average person doesn't just have spare phones to use as a hotspot the way we do.
Well, if you're the driver, you should be using
And to be fair, though, anyway. Some... Like for us, in the UK, I don't know what it's like for in the States, but if you just want a data connection just for a mobile broadband contract, you can often get a lot more for a lot less, even though... Majority of the time, we only use data anyway. For a phone contract, we still get lumbered with calls and text messages and all that stuff that we don't really want, but we have to have it because that's what they sell. So I mean, it's a niche thing, but I mean, someone will really love it.
Sure. Now, Alcatel also had one, I think at least one other product. They had this little home audio Bluetooth gateway.
Yeah, it runs Qualcomm's. All play standard.
It's a standard from Qualcomm.
Yeah, I mean, it's another one of those, like, how to stream your things everywhere standards, like Sonos, like, Samsung's All... What was Samsung's? They did All something.
Allcast. That was what it used to be called.
It's one of those, our standard's better than the other standards. I mean, when you have 13 standards, what does it mean? It's nice to have a lower cost option, but again, I mean, you've got... Google's Chromecast standard for this stuff too, and it's like, okay, that's one more. That's how I look at it. It's just one more standard. Maybe my stuff works with it, maybe it doesn't.
Yeah, no, but a neat thing about this though was it had standard 3.5 millimeter output on it.
Yeah,
but it also had an optical audio.
Yeah, that was interesting.
So in theory, you could hook it up to a legit surround sound system.
Yep.
Get that coming from your phone, assuming that you have audio files that include surround sound though.
On your phone.
Maybe some movies would.
Yeah, no, it was interesting, but yeah, just one more standard. Okay. What are we forgetting? Are we forgetting anything?
I can't even remember.
LG has a 23-carat gold Bang. That's worth.
It's worth a lot of money. It's worth.
Yeah.
A lot more than I have to spend on a watch.
Especially a digital smartwatch that...
Yeah.
So that's just kind of us touching on everything for... the better part of an hour. If you haven't seen it already, swing by our IFA page, or we've got a special tab on the front page. I'm not sure how long it'll be around after this podcast, but if you just go to androidcentral.com/IFA, you can find everything, and we'll do some roundup posts to help you find your way through it, because there has been a lot of stuff, and we're going to have so much more coming up as we spend more time with these devices.
Absolutely.
For sure. So, Alex, your number one thing from the show, what do you think?
It's tricky. I would say probably the Huawei watch. I think it's going to be really interesting to see how Huawei can get into that space. A lot of really, really nice looking versions of that thing. Looking forward to trying it out.
Richard, what do you think?
So I'm going to have to go with the Windows thing. I know it's never said.
It's fine. I don't care.
Oh, okay. No, it's
we have Windows users.
At the Acer event this morning, whatever morning it was, I don't even remember anymore. What day are we on? But at the Acer event, they showed off the first Windows 10 phone with support for Continuum, which is the kind of the plug it into a monitor with a mouse and a keyboard, and your phone becomes essentially a mini desktop PC. And Microsoft's teased it. Microsoft showed off the concepts, but no one's actually said, hey, here's a phone with it in. And you know, basically, Acer has beaten Microsoft to it. So, I mean, that's a huge deal for that platform and just in general for kind of smart devices, because it's another avenue.
That's been the promise of many for a long time. I remember the Motorola Atrix tried that, and it was kind of terrible.
It was horrible. So,
It's still a bit of an unknown quantity, but that's very exciting stuff.
All right, Derek, what about you?
Gear S2.
Yeah.
I'm really impressed.
It's pretty good.
I didn't have high hopes, and that might be years of Samsung prejudice, which has been turning around. I've been using a Galaxy S6 Edge for the better part of, however long it's been out now, a few months, and I'm really impressed by it. And the Gear S2 caught me off guard with how good it really is. I'm not sure I can overstate it enough in the form of audio podcasts. We'll have
price is going to be a question.
The
price
is a question. Hands waving.
Yes, you can't see me just gesturing at the microphone. And of course, you know,
I saw some Samsung money fall out of his pocket there.
And of course, you can check out our posts on it, and you can see it in action in our video. See just how smooth and impressive this device really is. But I think Samsung has something very good on their hands.
I'm really curious still to see how it works with everybody else's phones.
Yeah.
That's a big deal, and I'm glad Samsung's doing that. All right, Mark, what about you?
I think the Z5 Premium, it's ridiculous. It's 4K, and like I thought 1080p was ridiculous, and look, we're like up to 2K now, right? So
Mark can shoot videos on his fancy camera and watch them on his fancy Z5 with a 4K display, and the rest of us will just have to
make do with 1080p.
I know,
caveman.
His eyes are good enough to actually see it.
Or like the Matrix or something.
I'm gonna go for my pick with the crazy killer router from Asus.
He's not actually using it as a router. He's using it as a trap that hangs over the front door.
It's going to sit in a low pit just inside my front door, and if somebody sneaks in, they're going to fall into it.
Digest intruders and turns them into bandwidth.
Yes. It is the Sarlacc of routers.
Oh.
No?
No.
That was a stretch?
No. A nice try, though.
Well, that's probably a perfectly good fail to end this podcast on. Thank you all for listening and for all the fun comments. Well, we've been over here doing this and sleeping very little, which is why we sound as tired as we do, especially me. What else? I guess we will be back next week. Our next podcast, I'm not entirely sure where that's going to be from. At least I'll probably be in Las Vegas because we have another conference next week that I'm going to, apparently.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
Have fun with that.
Everybody else took one step back, apparently, and I was just kind of looking around.
Yeah, we're going to go home. Phil can go to Vegas.
Yeah. So again, please, you know, swing by /IFA on Android Central and on Windows Central too, because there's a lot of good stuff there. Follow us on all the social things, the Twitters, the Instagrams, the YouTubes. We'll have a good YouTube playlist up as well of all the IFA stuff we've seen here, so go check that out, youtube.com/AndroidCentral. Thanks to everybody who sponsored this show. Thanks to all you guys who came all the way to Europe, except for the British, who only had to fly like 3 hours, so that's no big deal.
In all fairness, Phil, it did take me 9 hours to get from London to Berlin.
Well, that wasn't my fault. Well, it wasn't your fault either, but
we're going to blame it on you. It's your fault, Richard.
Blame Lufthansa and the weather.
That's it. We will see you next week. So long from Germany.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.